The psalmist, Psalm 32, is profoundly depressed until he acknowledged his sin and pleaded with God for forgiveness. So like most of us, he's avoiding the truth, and that can be one reason for a bit of depression. And now that he's accepted the truth of it all, the truth does set us free. The experience of forgiveness has brought profound joy and a sense of deep gratitude, and he's advising others to follow his example. So let's have a look at the psalm and see if it bears that out. Happy is the person who's absolved from transgression, whose sin is buried and forgotten. Happy the person to whom Yahweh imputes no guilt, whose spirit is not darkened. And that actually is quoted by Paul in Romans chapter 4, verse 7 to 8. And here's a bit from Jesus after the resurrection scene, when he says, if you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. And he's talking to the disciples. He's not talking to priests or bishops or anybody. He's talking to the disciples. You know, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who trespass against us. So we're all called to forgive. It's correct the church carefully looks after forgiveness at that cultic public level, and that's reserved for priests from the beginning of the church to do that. But please remember that that forgiveness was for someone who'd broken from the community in a serious public way. You know, by adultery, or by the three big ones were apostasy of faith, adultery and murder. And they were the three sins that required a person who'd so publicly broken from the community to be welcomed back into the community. Everyone needed to be sure that they'd seen what they were doing and were repentant of it. And of course you can't go around explaining yourself to everybody in the community. So there was a level of trust whereby if the leader of the community, the presbyter, the priest, if the person had reconciled and the leader could say, no, Jim's sorry for what he's done, really, and it, you know, it won't happen again, and okay, then the community could say, oh great, welcome back, you know. It's not like phony stuff, it's real. And that public kind of stuff was very big in the early church. But about those very public sins, later on we got a little bit all caught up, I think, in too many. Mortal sins were a dime a dozen, really. And, you know, you could nearly commit a mortal sin at the drop of a hat, or drop of something else anyhow. So it got a bit silly, don't you think? It was too big a list. And we're getting back to something more sensible, I think. And that has effects on the sacrament of reconciliation that we have. We're still dealing with how to handle that sacrament. It's a beautiful sacrament, and sometimes it tries to replace spiritual direction, which it isn't really a replacement for. And there's a lot of work to be done in making that real. And some people don't use the sacrament at all. And the main sacrament of forgiveness is, of course, the Eucharist. We come to Jesus as sinners anyhow. And so there's a lot of clarifying to be done in the use of the sacraments. Why did I say that? Oh, here. Because Jesus is saying to the disciples, if you forgive anyone, well, they're forgiven. If you forgive your husband, well, I forgive him. That's fine. If you forgive your wife, well, I'm forgiving. In fact, I forgive her through you. That's what it's all about. But if you don't forgive, well, they're not forgiven. So get on with forgiving is the point. If you hold me, if I hurt you and you don't forgive me, well, I'm still bound, aren't I? I can't be free of it, because every time you look at me, you remind me of what I did. So forgiveness is such a healing, wonderful gift to give someone. It's the gift to give, because love in the real world always means forgiveness. Surely, because we're not innocent. And there's a beautiful place in all that for the sacrament of reconciliation. Of course there is, but we're still struggling to find it, I think. Well, I don't think it, I know it. So our psalmist continues, while I kept silence, even my bones wasted away, and I moaned all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength dried up as in a summer's heat. But then I acknowledged my sin to you. I did not hide my guilt. I said, I'll confess my transgressions to Yahweh, and you forgave my guilt and my sin. Therefore, let all who are faithful offer prayer to you at a time of distress. The rush of the mighty flood shall not reach them. Rush of the mighty flood shall not reach them reminded me of this poem in the book of Jonah, the short story, a comical, wonderful short story of Jonah. You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. Your waves and your billows passed over me, and I said, I'm driven away from your sight. How shall I look again upon your holy temple? The waters closed in over me. The deep surrounded me. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, Yahweh my God. All my life was ebbing away, and I remembered Yahweh, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Those who worship vain idols forsake their true loyalty. And that story too is about flood, sea, overwhelming, and you know the story of Jonah. The story, may I say, of Jonah. Verse 7, you are a hiding place for me. You free me from danger. When I cry help, you surround me. It continues, I will instruct you. I will show you the road to follow. I will give you counsel and keep watch over you. The promise made to God, by God to the psalmist. Here I've just quoted a bit from Nahum, a prophet you probably hardly ever read. It's only one page in the Bible. You may have not have even found it. But if you search hard, you'll find a one page or two pages on the prophecy of Nahum. You know where Jesus spent a lot of his time was Kfar Nahum. Capernaum or Kfar Nahum. Kfar in Arabic just means town. Nahum, the town of Nahum. Is it this Nahum or another Nahum? I don't know. But that's what the name means, Capernaum. Yahweh is good, a stronghold in a day of trouble. He protects those who take refuge in him, even in a rushing flood. He will make a full end of his adversaries and pursue his enemies into darkness. Picking up, that's verse 7. And here, picking up verse 8 from the Proverbs chapter 4, I have taught you the way of wisdom. I've led you in the paths of righteousness, of uprightness. When you walk, your step will not be hampered, and if you run, you will not stumble. Keep hold of instruction. Don't let it go. Guard her. She is your life. So those of you who have been well instructed in the faith, thank God for your teachers. And that concludes Psalm 32. So God is caring for us, and he gives us this advice, or this advice to the psalmist, but me too, you. Don't be like a horse or a mule without understanding, who can't be approached unless your temper is curbed with bit and bridle. Man, you've got to get this dash thing in to stop it biting. Many are the torments of the wicked, but kindness surrounds those who trust in Yahweh. Be glad in Yahweh, and rejoice, O you just. Shout for joy, all you upright of heart.